Hello, hey, bonjour. I'm Gwen Lafage, and this is B2B Marketing Fika, a series of casual interviews with B2B marketers in Europe. Real stories, real tips from the people who are actually doing the real work on the ground. Let's grab a coffee and a bully, and let's get started. Good morning. Today, I'm happy to welcome Johanna Edepil to the B2B Marketing Fika podcast. Johanna is Chief Marketing Officer at XM Reality. XM Reality is a Swedish company who does remote guidance. So it's a SaaS solution, remote guidance SaaS solution. Welcome, Johanna.
Oh, thank you very much. And nice to be here.
Thanks. Maybe as a starting point, you can explain us a little bit what is remote guidance, because it seems like a pretty, well, different solution than what we used to working in B2B tech and with SaaS solutions.
Yep, I do see the need to explain what it actually is, and that's very clear if you Google it as well. That there's not very much search traffic on remote guidance. Most people not familiar with it, but you might have heard of different expressions such as remote support, remote assistance, visual assistance. All of those are basically the same type of solution. We call it remote guidance, and that's our trademark. But what happens is that you can say that we start with a normal video call. That's the basic of it. You actually connect with each other and have a video feed. But compared to a normal video call where you just like you and I are doing right now, we look at each other. Instead, the point is to look jointly at the problem. So you only have one video feed you're watching, and then you have a lot of different features, some of them being augmented reality, where you can actually take things into the other person's video feed. You can use pointers, you can share drawings, but usually the fundamental of it is how can you help someone from a distance? And mostly this is an industry, like instead of being right by their side, what can you actually do through remote video?
Okay, so who is it usually for? Who are the people that are using it?
Normally, if you look at our customer base, it's industrial companies. Usually it's around some type of manufacturing process, either if it's within energy, it's different machines, it can be within the food and beverage segment where you have the packaging machines and the processes. So usually you always have a technical element. In some cases, it might be something as simple as your air condition unit, but usually it's in a B2B setting for us. It's not a lot of a B2C usage at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And from what I've seen, the company has been like in business for a while, but things have recently kind of changed, right? You became SaaS pretty recently, correct?
Yeah, I mean, the company has existed in different forms, if you want to call it like that, since 2007. A lot of it was initially research-based around AR capabilities. So the founders were really early with developing different AR capabilities, and they were working close, especially with the Swedish military, actually. So one of the first applications was actually, how can you help someone disarm a mine without having to be there? Because of course, in that type of military setting, you want to have as few people involved as possible, but you might not have an expert close at hand. So, okay, how can you help a person disarm a mine? That was one of the first use cases. And the company is going a little bit back and forth, trying to find a good fit. For a few years, there was quite a lot of hardware focus. For a while, there were production of own smart glasses. And it's actually just a few years now that it's been more of a pure SaaS company since we were introduced on the Swedish stock exchange. And I would say in the current form, it's around 3 years where we've had the type of setup that we have today.
Right. Okay. And from what I've seen, like you, so the company is still fairly small, but you are the remote guidance is used in like 60 different countries around the world. And you have an offices here in Sweden and in the US, right? Yes. Is the US like your plan for expansion? Is that like a big market for you because it's pretty industrial?
At the moment, the US isn't a big market for us. Most of our customers are with a European base, but then just like you point out, there's a lot of usage and you have users and calls being made all actually on all continents of the world. But US market is definitely where we do see a lot of potential. And the big challenge also with the US market is the fact that many of our competitors actually have their roots in the US market. So they've been there from the start. They've made a name for themselves. For us, our starting point was in Europe and Sweden. And now we basically need to do the same journey in the US as well, where we establish ourselves as an important player in the market. But it's easier said than done.
Yeah. So what's your planning or what's the strategy for trying to break into like a huge market when you're a small Swedish company?
Yeah. I mean, of course, it's one of those things where we're still in an expansion phase. It's going very well for us, but we are, like you point out, still a small company. And I think right now we are really looking into understanding what things we are doing here from the Swedish office that could be applicable for how the strategy we should have for the US market and what things that we actually need to change based on, you know, the US way of doing business. Okay, who can you actually your contact points being? What type of messaging? That's a really huge point, understanding like, okay, how do we need to build up our messaging around our solution? Can it actually be the same that we used here in Sweden? And we see that probably not. We do need to make some modifications there. So right now we're really in a mapping phase of understanding what best practice can we take from what we're doing currently and what do we need to reinvent for the US market?
Mm-hmm. So what has been like your kind of marketing strategy like over there? Have you started to go to market there or is it you're still in kind of the research and discovery phase?
Yeah, I mean, I have to be honest and say we have done a go-to-market attempt in the US, but we haven't been successful. And in the first round, I think that was very much about us just trying to push the Swedish model, if you want to call it that, just into the US market. And we ended up basically discovering like, okay, for some reason, we are not gaining traction here. Mm-hmm. So now we've taken a step back and really doing the homework all over again. So right now we are in the process of establishing a go-to-market strategy for the US, which includes everything from sales to marketing and also just organization-wise. How do we build it up? Because we do understand that we need to have people on the ground in US in order to become successful there.
Right. So what have been pretty successful for you in Europe in terms of marketing? What do you rely on?
This is actually a very interesting thing during 2020 that has brought, if we look at it historically, what has really been our key success factor in marketing, it has been large events where we have had a strategy. Usually our type of solution, just like you point out, it's not something people just get. You haven't seen it before. It's really one of those things that where once you actually see it, you understand like, okay, this is actually really simple but powerful, but you usually need to see it, a demonstration of it. So we've been very focused on getting stage time on larger events for people to really discover. And, you know, we have a booth where everyone can try the software. So 2020 was like our main marketing strategy was actually all around larger events.
Yeah. that was the case for a lot of B2B tech companies that were relying a lot on large events. So I think like everyone has to kind of shift to digital, but I can see how that can be tricky for something that you need to demonstrate.
Yeah, and that has been a true challenge. I mean, it will be really interesting to see how it will develop further after all of this. But to start with, for us, for me, I started with a company beginning of 2020, so I'm also fairly new to...
And right at the perfect time, so yeah.
yep. And I have to say that in our case, it was also one of the things I went in with. My ambition was, of course, to coming in to grow our digital marketing and make sure that we really have some good strategies behind it, not just like, okay... everyone says that you should do advertising on LinkedIn, so let's do advertising on LinkedIn, but making sure that we have a strategy and that you have take it the whole way. I mean, you need to have the buyer's journey perspective in your marketing, and that was really lacking, I would say, prior. So what has been instead the focus for our marketing efforts this year has been, it can be a little bit frustrating, but it's really been go back to basic and let's build a good foundation. Mm-hmm. And that is easier said than done in a small company like us. When you have a lot of ambition and you want to do so much to market yourself everywhere, it's so easy that everything just becomes scattered. I actually realized that after my first couple of months was like that. I had so much things to do. My days were extremely hectic. But when I sat down after, I think it was actually 2 months when I started, like end of February, and like, okay, now I really need to wrap up what have I achieved during these 2 months.
Yeah.
And I basically realized that output wise, no, it's really been disappointing because you're just going round and round in circles. You're doing some small stuff here, some other stuff there. You're listening to the sales team that needs some support with different things. And those activities are important, but you can't lose sight with marketing. You always have to think quite far ahead is my experience. You can't just live in the now. You actually have to do the activities that will make sure that in 6 months' time, you might, for when it comes to sales support, how do I generate the leads? There's not very much I can do in a 1 month time. So I really need to think about how to build that forward. And that's been my a little bit struggle this year, to be able to think like, okay, this is actually worth my time doing this well, because I know it's going to start to pay off by the end of the year and beginning of 2021. So we've done a lot of structural changes, we've changed our marketing automation system. We've built up a completely new website. We've started to just review our entire messaging we have around our offer and making sure that we are better aligned with the buyer's journey. But those are things where you do a lot of the groundwork and you might not have that high of an output at the same time, which is it is frustrating.
Yeah, it's hard at the beginning, especially when you start a new job, to like both try to go for the low hanging fruits, but build the foundation at the same time if they're not there. But that said, from what I've seen, you had a really good year. Like the company had a pretty good year. I was reading something, or maybe listening to a video of you and your CEO in the car when you were talking about your Q3 results and saying that this was your second best quarter ever.
Yep.
So I guess it's still been a good year for you.
Yeah. And that has actually been what, from a marketing perspective, that has been a little bit of the reprieve or the opportunity I needed to lay the foundation, because when the pandemic hit, where we started to see the effects was in March, end of March more. And of course, if you take it, you have a lot of industrial companies who have manufacturing. Many times they have it worldwide, different sites, and all of a sudden you can't. Usually you might have service engineers who are traveling either in country or many times just between countries, providing support, helping with something breaks down, or you need to do some maintenance procedures. And all of a sudden you were completely grounded. So we could see from our perspective, we both had the usage from our already existing customers spiked when you looked at the traffic from our solution. And we also could see that the interest for the solution became much higher than before. And we also had a lot of customers who potential customers who we were already in a dialogue with, but they really just sped up their purchasing process to make sure that they might have prior to that been thinking like, okay, let's do this implementing remote guidance second part end of 2020. But they really just said that we need to do this now.
Yeah, of course.
Everything, we really got a boost there, and it helped us, which was perfect from a marketing perspective, because I could then also, you know, take the time to do some of the foundations, such as building up a new website and things that takes time. And we are a very small team, so we don't have that much resources to do. We can't multitask too much.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it definitely seemed that it had, like, the pandemic in some way had a positive impact, because you're right into helping people work remote, which is what people need this year, right?
We had a lot of cases where I think that for some people it really became clear, like, okay, why do I need a remote guidance solution instead of, you know, using a regular video call? Because a lot of the companies started out like, okay, let's try to fix this through WhatsApp. We can connect there and have a video feed. But you realize, like, when you're trying to see the same thing and you're trying to guide each other, it's not built for that type of interaction. It's built for looking at each other, not at actually looking at problems and highlighting things and showing like, okay, these are the detailed steps you need to go through. So it's been one of those things where several companies have really realized the benefits, and I hope they will, once they've gotten it into their processes, I hope that they in the long term will also see the benefits of especially sustainability when it comes to reducing travel. But you also have, you share knowledge in another way compared to what you might have done before when you connect someone who is, well, less versed in something with an expert, and they get guided step by step by how to do it. In that process, they will also learn and be able to hopefully do a few more things by themselves. So it's really beneficial for companies even after this. And
long term.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting how this year have in a way accelerated the digital transformation of a lot of companies, because they had to, and there was no other ways around it, right?
Yep.
And the kind of remote working and the we get used to like the Zoom meetings and everything, but still it has like a massive push towards mm-hmm. that this year. And just going back to what you said earlier, like, you were relying a lot on events before mm-hmm. before this, and so have you, while laying the foundation, have you also kind of worked around some marketing tactics, maybe doing more webinars? Have you done virtual events? What has been like the shift?
No, so far we haven't done one yet, but we are right now starting to look into different types of webinars. To begin with, we're going to have some here in December, and to begin with, it will be mostly towards existing customers. Mm-hmm. And then we'll see, take it from there and see how we'll expand it. But what we really try to do now is, I would say that if you look at the marketing or the buyer's journey, a lot of our marketing prior to this was very focused at just pre-purchase, very late in the buyer journey where we came in. And right now since we've grown our customer base a lot during this year, and also the usage, we've learned a lot about our customers, the benefits we actually bring to their business, and also a lot about the obstacles they are encountering when doing this. So what we've been trying to focus a lot within the marketing is like, okay, how can we take down those pain points or make sure that our customers or potential customers are actually aware of them even before they implement it? So how can we really make sure that when they start to think about buying remote guidance, that they know, okay, who do I need to get on board within my organization? What are important factors to set up a successful implementation project? So that's has been where we've focused a lot of our marketing with. How can we make sure even before they buy our solution that they are geared up to be successful with it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I would think, because it's kind of an unusual solution in many ways, that there's a lot of education and maybe sort of leadership to do around the product, and even if around not just your brand, but the category, right? Around like remote guidance in general. Is that something that people are really aware of, or is that pretty new type of solution?
But they're usually very new to it. So we really need to help educate the buyer to understand what they need to do. And I mean, one of the toughest things, and I think that's regardless of what type of IT system or something that you decide to implement in the company, it's always change management within the company. I mean, and that's something, I mean, we can provide the customers with a lot of tips and insights prior to it, but we see very clearly that the ones who have a good plan, a structured plan for, okay, how do we roll this out in the organization? How do we have a follow-up schedule? How do we make sure that everyone gets the support and training they need? They tend to be a lot more successful in their implementation. I would say that that probably goes along with, doesn't matter what type of IT system or something like that that you decide to install, you always have the tricky part with change management internally.
Yeah, okay, I know that's super interesting, because it's really like somehow a very new market using very new technology that could be super useful for a lot of industry and a lot of companies, but that you need a lot of education so that you can own this this category. Do you have like competitors in Europe, or are you like
one? No, we do have that. In this case, for us, it's a, you need to say what we mean by competitors. We basically have one who has a very similar technical setup to us. And then you have several others who are similar, but still quite different. But on the other hand, you still have to understand that your competitors are more than just the people who have an exact similar solution to you. I mean, in some cases, it can even be like, okay, for us, let's say that FaceTime. Yeah, it is in some cases a competitor to us, because we do know that some people will reason that, no, I don't need remote guidance, I can just do a FaceTime call. Mm-hmm. And even if it's a completely different purpose with the FaceTime call, it's still like, okay, they want to use that for the same type of problem that they want to use us. So that's also something where we need to be aware that we really need to be open-minded to, okay, what is a competitor? It comes down to the fact that, okay, we do know the customers have pain points and problems. We are one potential solution to some of them. And what other solutions might they consider? And it can be something completely different than the type of offer we have.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Okay, cool. So what are like one last question, I guess, before we go. Do you have any prediction for 2021 as we're getting closer to the end of the year, both for like XM Reality and maybe in marketing in general? Like, do you see some big trends or something that will emerge next year?
I have a couple of things where I think that from what I've seen, video interaction will increase a lot. And with that, not just the meetings we are having now, but a lot with pre-recorded video. How do you support, how can you use it in your marketing as well? I think a lot of people have become, to begin with, it was like, okay, we need to replace the events and the physical meetings by having virtual meetings. But then you've taken it, people have become more comfortable both with using video themselves, being displayed and watching other people. It feels more normal. So I think that will definitely be something that we will continue to see in all different ways in marketing, video being more and more prominent. And not the, perhaps before you always had the nice marketing videos you may you build up, you spend a lot of money on it. I think that will be a lot more just simple recordings and you will also just have people doing more on their own, like a sales representative deciding like, okay, I'm actually going to start doing some short video snippets that I post on my LinkedIn, etc. So I really think that will be a big trend that will continue, even if we might be able to take up the face-to-face interactions again.
Yeah. No, I think I agree. Both in marketing and in sales, I think, like using videos throughout, like the sales process as well. And I'm starting to see that happening too already. So yeah, great. Great. Well, thank you so much for your time and have a wonderful day.
Yeah, you too. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.
This podcast is sponsored by Skona, a full-service creative agency with offices in San Francisco and Stockholm, which transforms B2B companies into brave brands.